Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish Podcast.
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show. Today, we'll be looking ahead to Saturday's game against Bournemouth at the Cottage. Is it a must win? Feels a bit strong to say it's a must win. It would be very, very nice to win is maybe the phrase that feels more accurate. In today's podcast, we'll look ahead to that game. We'll do the final word on Burnley. We'll also look back in a bit more detail, a bit more of a broader view at the transfer window. We only made one signing, but there's still lots of talking points that came out of the 31 days in January. And I'm joined today and delighted to be... I'm joined today, delighted to say, by the regular Thursday Club, Jack Collins. Hello.
Hello, Sammy. Hello, listeners. How are we doing?
Good, thank you. And Peter Rutzler is back. Hello, Peter.
Hello. Hello, Sammy. Hello, Jack. Hello, everyone. How are we doing? Are we all good?
Yeah, great.
Good to have you back.
It is good to have you.
It's not my first one of the year. I did one at the start of the window, didn't I? I vaguely remember. But yeah.
Yeah, right at the top.
It's been a while.
Good to have you, Peter, especially because it is the Peter Rutzler Derby this weekend. So how could we not get you on for your very own Derby? You, of course, were the most controversial transfer ever between Bournemouth and Fulham back in the day, as people might remember. So it's good to get you back for your own Derby. Have you been looking forward to it? Have you had a lot of messages in the build-up?
No, not really. It's not circled in the calendar anymore. I don't think people really care that much, to be honest, but interesting one. It was quite fun when Scott Parker was down there as well, because it was so much overlap and it was great. But
they got Parker, we got Rutzler. I think we got the better deal.
I was speaking to Sam Davis, who does the Back of the Net Bournemouth podcast earlier, and he put it perfectly. He said, Bournemouth and Fulham's relationship is now two people that went out with the same person, but now that's both of their exes. And at the time, Fulham tried to warn Bournemouth, no, honestly, you're making a mistake, but they didn't want to hear any of it. And now they can meet up over a pint and agree with each other that actually maybe they're better off after all. We'll come on to Bournemouth in a little bit. Let's do the final words on Saturday's 2-2 draw at Burnley. Jack, obviously you did a great job with the boys dissecting.
It's not how I would put it.
Yeah, I mean, if less said about the podcast title, the better. But you know, it was a cathartic listen after what was a frustrating draw. I mean, Peter, with a bit of time to kind of think about it, obviously in the moment I was quite angry that Fulham had somehow thrown that away, but we just need to keep our head above water here, and it's disappointing. Individual errors are to blame, clearly, but I don't know, I felt like there were some quite hot takes after Saturday, trying to find a trend, trying to find someone at fault, and short of Bernd Leno coming for a cross that he was never going to get, I don't feel like there is any need for a massive investigation other than we've just got to cut out mistakes.
Yeah, I wasn't there on Saturday, and I hate not being there, but it did mean that I had to watch it, I suppose, through the medium of social media, and I could see the sort of collective kind of meltdown after full time online, which did feel a little extreme. Obviously it's felt more acutely when you throw away a 2-0 lead, in the closing stages of the game. coming back off the back of a window, and obviously there's a lot of tension around the window and what Fulham could and couldn't do during that time, and I think that all plays its sort of role in it. To be honest, I think there were elements that were encouraging from the first half, particularly the fact that Fulham scored twice in quick succession, particularly scoring from a set play, which Fulham haven't done as much as they did last year, and that can be a real game changer for a side that, you know, do create chances, but, you know, are always better when the other team are chasing the game. You know, we talk about game state all the time, but game set plays are such a key weapon now, and we see that across the Premier League with the number of specialist set play coaches to throw-in coaches now. It's huge. And then, you know, obviously Rodrigo Muniz scoring, how important that is. You know, even though we've got Armando Broya coming in, you know, just having Muniz scoring a goal, his first Premier League goal, I think that's, and making him feel like he can do it at this level is important. But then, you know, the flip side is the second half and then the nature in which the game got away from Fulham again. It's not the first time we've seen that happen. And I think that's, you know, you're going to be understandably worried and concerned about that, particularly against a Burnley team that haven't really impressed. You don't necessarily seem to necessarily have the tools to mount these kind of comebacks. And that's a huge frustration. And you know, when you actually look at Fulham's results, this is a pretty bad patch at the moment. You know, the Arsenal win aside and the run in the League Cup, Fulham haven't won since the back-to-back 5-0 wins in the league. And it builds the pressure. You know, Everton was a game Fulham want to win at home. Burnley's a game you want to win away. Bournemouth is a game you want to win at home because then the fixtures get a bit tougher. So I think all of that plays a part in why everything felt a bit more frantic than it did. But to get to the bottom line of it is how serious I'm. You know, I don't think it's a massive concern. I don't feel like that's the case. And I think the reaction was understandable, but probably a little hot for my liking, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think the flip of it is that obviously, are we ever going to have a better opportunity to win and break that turf more curse than what we had on Saturday? And that's obviously a frustration in itself. Like, this is a team we've lost to without them having a shot on target at Turf Moor. So to be 2-0 up and throw it away and not be able to actually finally put that to bed is a frustration. I think the other thing with it is that if Fulham had won at the weekend, I would have probably gone out on a limb to say, I think it's done. I think we're safe. Just in terms of the way that the bottom is there and the teams and bodies that are in the way. And now that there isn't those, you know, extra 2 points, I know that sounds mad. We're talking about a 2-point difference, but I think it's just being in the vortex or out of the vortex. And I think that there feels like a kind of sentiment that I was like, oh, we're still on the edge of that. And with Luton going on this kind of chaotic sandstorm run of scoring, one, shed loads of goals, and two, actually pulling out some very impressive results, it's not necessarily a question of whether Luton stay up or not, because I don't think actually is the difference here. I think it's the difference of whether that spurs on the teams around them. And I'm not talking really about Burnley or Sheffield United. I'm talking about the fact that we're looking at your Nottingham Forests and your Evertons and going, if they're seeing Luton start to pick up those points, surely the key element there is you go, ooh, are they starting to jump up on Fulham? And I think if Luton hadn't gone on this barnstorming run, then actually it would have probably been finished, because I don't think it would have inspired anyone else to get out of the mix. Now, I think there's enough teams between us, and I think there's worse teams. I think Burnley not winning at home against us is pretty much curtains for them. And them and Sheffield United, I think, are gone.
There's only one spot now.
And I think that there are teams worse than Fulham, including Crystal Palace, who are in a bit of a hole.
But and yeah, there's a points deduction element.
And there's a potential, you know, points deduction. Yeah, you know, of course, all of these things. But I don't want to be relying on that, especially if we don't know until May. The last thing in the world we need to be doing is worrying about where Fulham are. Look, if we have to go into a final day game against Luton needing something, I'm uncomfortable. Deeply uncomfortable.
That's mad. I do not want that.
Exactly. So I'm basically being like, can we pull ourselves out? And so a game like this game against Bournemouth, as good a form as they've been in, and look, it's a bit different in that they started really badly and then started picking up points. Bournemouth are widely seen as having a relatively good season. And they're what? A point above Fulham? A win in this game would take Fulham above Bournemouth. And so there's that kind of optic level of where we are and what we're doing as well. And I think that that's important here. And that's why I think this is one of those games you're like, just win it. And it's probably enough to see you over the line, especially with a bad run, as Peter mentioned, coming along.
I mean, Peter, one thing that also came out of my chat with Sam from back of the net was he's like, there's a point between Bournemouth and Fulham, yet the difference in attitudes, you know, he said, like, I look at Fulham and fans and they're all talking about looking over their shoulders and stuff. And Bournemouth are really up looking up the table. They're looking at, right, how can we gate crash the top 10? But I did say, I mean, that's just contrasting form, right? Yes, there's nothing between Bournemouth and Fulham right now in terms of points in the table. But yeah, when you contrast the couple of months they've had and then the couple of months we've had, it's no surprise really that one fan base is getting more nervous than the other.
Yeah, it's perception, isn't it? I mean, Fulham last year at this point, you know, we're up near top 6-7. this season hasn't gone the same way, hasn't been at that same level, and it did peter out at the end of last season. Bournemouth, you know, as Jack mentioned, started really slowly, been on a terrific run. I don't think they've won since they beat Fulham, so they're not flying right now. So maybe their perceptions might twist a little bit if they get a negative result on Saturday. But yeah, I think you're right. It's just a matter of how everyone perceives things to be going, and that doesn't just apply to the games around certain fixtures. It can also feel like, you know, the longer term, and you know, are the teams stepping forward? Is this progression? Is it not? Where are we going, kind of thing? And I think there's been so much discussion that's not necessarily about what's on the field, and that can colour the immediate games too. So that also plays a part, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Jack, I felt like Saturday was mostly a good performance. For 70 minutes.
70 minutes, yeah.
There was a lot to be very excited about. Let's come on to Breuer and his performance. I thought it was quiet. I don't think he had a huge impact. I thought there was glimpses of something there. And I mean, we can't have expected too much a day after arriving to Fulham. He must have been learning names by the time he was on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, Dom said it on the podcast the weekend, he didn't look fit. And I think that might necessarily just be a bit of lack of match sharpness. Obviously, he's had not that many games in the wrong half of SW6 this season, and also has been, you know, here and there in terms of injuries over the last year or so. So I think it's going to take some time for him to get up to match sharpness. And actually, I mean, I'm sure we'll do predicted lineups, but I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't start here again, if he just gets that, you know, that bit of time off the bench to get him up to speed. Also, Muniz didn't really do anything to warrant being dropped. So I think that he will, you know, there is that obviously caveat in the contract that we have to give him a certain amount of minutes in order to not pay a fee. So that will be at the back of people's minds. But
yeah, he will play.
Yeah, I'm just thinking
at some point he will have to play.
I think once he starts playing and once he takes the number 9 shirt, he'll keep it. But I think it might just be too early again this week for him to start. I'm not saying he will or won't. I'm just saying that I wouldn't be surprised if it flips out that way. I'm interested in lots of things. I'm interested in the way that Fulham look with a striker running in behind a little bit more, because it's not something we've seen loads of. And that has been a key part of his game at Southampton and then again at Chelsea. I'm interested in what it's mean. I said this on Monday about the who plays at right back, because if we're going to start looking towards a more aerially targeted, you know, centre forward again, does that open the door for Kenny Tete to take his spot back? Because that's something obviously we saw a lot of last year, that mix up and match up between him and Alexander Mitrovic. Does that allow him to find a space back into the squad? And I'm mostly interested in how you actually pronounce Armando Breuer's name, because my barber, who's Albanian, says it's Breuer. You say Breuer. And he, on his own video, says Brozier. So I've no idea.
Hang on. Wasn't there there was a post on the official club account? We can get this clarified right now.
But he said Brozier, I'm pretty sure, in his first interview. He says, "Hi, I'm Armando Brozier."
Yeah, but hasn't, I think he said before that you can say both, and both right, is fine.
Here we go. I'm playing it into the microphone.
Armando Breuer. Armando Breuer.
Right. There we go.
Armando Breuer.
All right.
There we go.
We'll just keep repeating it and it'll just, you know, get Breuer stuck in everyone's mind.
So we're going with Breuer. Fine. Breuer. Fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, there's. I think it's good.
These are important things.
Well, I mean, I'm still fairly sure that about 32% of the Fulham fan base still don't know how to spell Joao Polinia, so...
Or say it.
Hey, we could have this debate all day. Peter, transfers, it would be interesting to just hear your take. It was another late one for you. Fulham love a deal sheet, don't they?
Deal sheet FC, honestly.
maybe they just got a load of them and you just got to use them. So, you know, just every window, just got to use them out. Like, don't waste paper.
It's a green initiative.
I'm interested to see, like, the Athletic kind of, I assume they must track your laptop or who's logging on when or whatever. It must be every transfer deadline day that poor old Peter Rutzler, the Fulham correspondent, has to go to bed last every single time.
We tend to go into the office for deadline day because it's busier and there's more people around. And if you need to speak to someone, you know, it's easier. But I think what's catching on is that there's a recognition that Fulham do a lot late because I tend to be one of the last to leave. But also there's a sort of fear that if your club is also involved with Fulham, that also means you're staying with me. So obviously there was Simon Johnson, Chelsea was the one staying up. So yes, unfortunately for him, he became acquainted with a late finish for deadline day.
How did you find it? I mean, Fulham said they weren't going to be busy and alas, they weren't. I guess a lot of fans, though, interested to know what other avenues Fulham were pursuing because Breuer wasn't the only person that was targeted through the month. There was obviously Andre, Cherky, who else kind of like came across your desk that was a potential near miss?
I think, you know, Marco Silva eventually spelled it out in his press conferences. You know, Fulham were looking at two positions. One was a striker, as we all know, that's not new. And the other was a winger or a wide forward, I think someone to play in that sort of attack line. But once it became clear early in the window, I think we discussed this before, that Fulham weren't going to spend the earth, they weren't going to invest much at all. It was quite evident that not only would it be quiet, but also that if Fulham were to do anything, it would need someone to go. And that it was just a case of one out, one in. And we did see that with Carlos Vinicius going to Galatasaray. Obviously, the Turkish window was slightly later, so it didn't need to sort of go through on deadline day. But I think there needed to be a sense that something was going to happen for Breuer to come in. I get the sense that I don't think Fulham would have done anything necessarily in January if Raul Jimenez hadn't got injured. That's my feeling on it. I think there was a contentment with the way the squad was. I think with Andre, you know, that's been really well documented, and you know he was and is a key target. But it was always sort of a target for if Palhinha left rather than a player to complement the midfield. And to be honest, that made sense because you had a midfield that is pretty well stocked. It's probably Fulham's best position in terms of depth at the moment. I think you can make a case to say maybe Sasa Lukic could have gone out on loan and done something or similar. And you can maybe go for the long term and that sort of element.
I was going to say, it's a lack of succession planning because someone's going to have to come in and hit the ground running now if Palhinha does leave in the summer.
Yeah. So once that decision was made about one in, one out, then I don't think it was going to happen. You know, Silva mentioned a financial point of view, and I mean, we could be here till the end of the year trying to work out the financial situation, and it's very difficult. I did a piece at the start of January, basically outlining what we knew when there was all the talk about FFP and how close Fulham were. Obviously, that's referring to last season's accounts, and we don't actually have last season's accounts. So again, it's a lot of it is just trying to piece together. Well, what have they spent? What does history tell us about how Fulham's finances are? And Fulham's finances tend to be that they'll get a Premier League payment. Most of that will go on wages. And then everything else tends to be losses that Shahid Khan pays for. That's kind of it with transfers. Obviously, this season there was Mitrovic and he sold for 45 million. That will go onto this season's books. So not the books we were talking about earlier this month with FFP, which refers to last year. But if you were to project it onto this season, which is what we all want to know, because we want to know what are they limited for, you then look at what they spent, and they spent about 65 million in the summer. Which you then take
amortized, right?
Yes, it's amortized over the length of the contracts. And then you factor in the number of new contracts that Fulham have also made and what that financial commitment does to their wage bill and the payments that go with that. It's a lot of unknowns. I can't say for certain, you know, was it FFP that stopped Fulham this year? I'd be surprised because the Mitrovic money was there. And that should help them. And you consider that they finished 10th last year as well, which was the first year of a new television broadcast payment deal. So whatever it was, and it's harder to get a clear, you know, understanding of exactly what it is without knowing the numbers, particularly for last year, because it's just you're projecting so much. The bottom line was that they weren't going to invest money. They weren't going to make that financial commitment this window. So that led to towards the end, and obviously Jimenez gets his hamstring injury. I think I put in my piece, it's at least a month for Jimenez. It's not a short term one, that's for sure. And they needed a striker because Carlos Vinicius, I think, hasn't really lived up to the level I think we'd hoped. I think there's a lot. It's strange how he's evolved in terms of, you know, well, could he get the starting position of Jimenez at the start of the season, as we saw Jimenez's confidence drop. But I think in terms of his technical ability, he wasn't the man who was going to fill in that role longer term. And then Rodrigo Muniz, who, you know, was great against Burnley, and he's earnest and hardworking and shows glimpses of brilliance, but is very raw and hadn't actually scored in the Premier League. So I think once that happened, it's like, well, you definitely need someone in. And then we got a deal with the Breuer deal, which reflected the sort of financial status of January, which was, yes, there's a £4 million loan fee, but, you know, Fulham will not have to pay that if he makes a certain number of appearances. I think it's around 10, but I'm not 100% sure. That's how we got to that point. I mean, you mentioned about that Ryan Cherki. I tried to check that. That was played down to me. I think there was definitely interest in a winger, but I think the flip side with a winger is you've got Wilson, who's got shoulder injury, who's coming back pretty soon. You've got Iwobi, who'll be coming back after AFCON this weekend, the final. Obviously, they've reached the final, which is terrific news for them, for him and Calvin Bassey. So it's not as acute in those areas. But I think the overriding conclusion for me anyway, and I think it'll be the same for most, is that there are still some long-term questions to resolve. The Mitrovic question still isn't really resolved, especially as Breuer is alone. There's no option. You know, maybe it works out really well and he signs and everyone's happy, but that's still something to resolve. Palhinha, there was the interest didn't materialize this window, but that's not to say it won't materialize in the summer. So then we go back to that issue again in the summer. And then you've got Oslitosin Adrabayo's contract's running out in the summer. There are lots of different aspects. Willian's 35, 36. He's still going great, which is brilliant, but, you know, won't go forever. Tim Ream. So, there's work to do, I think, for the summer. And I don't know whether that played a part in the thinking for January and just go, well, we'll sort this in the summer where we know where we are.
It does feel like Fulham, and look, it might work for a while, but eventually I guess the bubble will burst, have an amazing ability to kind of put a sticking plaster on their problems. And everyone's like, right, when is this big summer going to come where everything's going to have to be kind of sorted out? Because it just feels like Fulham have this ability to go like, okay, no, it's fine. We've managed to come up with a short-term solution to that one. And it's mostly working at the moment. I guess there is, and especially with the amount of older players that we've got in our squad, etc., Jack, but it does feel like maybe this summer is going to have to be the one, assuming we stay up, which is not 100% given, that we're actually going to have to make some tough calls and sell some big players and buy some big players.
Yeah, like at some point we need to become a smart football club, right? If we want to sustain this and, you know, start to get in line with these things. And you know, Peter mentions it, we don't know the exact ins and outs of the finances here. But what we do know is that the ticket prices at the Cottage are not touching these sides. And then this is why the debate is so fierce on that, of actually what this looks like. And there'll be plenty of people who will see these posts, will look at the protests, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and be like, well, if you want all these players and you want new players to sign, then you have, this is what you have to do. And one, it's just fundamentally untrue. And two, you have to look at the wider run elements of the football club in order to categorize that, right? So if Fulham continue to buy 30, 31-year-old, 32-year-old players with no resale value, then we're never going to make profits on players. So it's as simple as that. And that feeds this cycle of needing to scramble around for things. And actually, when you look at what, I know it's a cliche to say what Brentford and Brighton are doing, but actually I was going to point to Bournemouth. Because I think that when you look at what Bournemouth are doing in terms of the players that they've signed and turning into one of the younger squads within this division, you look at those players and you think sell on value everywhere. Milos Kerkez at right back, Marcus Senesi at centre back. You're looking at a host of young players who you're going to go, either they're going to succeed or Bournemouth will be able to make a profit of them, or both. And
what Fulham are is the exact opposite end of that. And I understand that different managers like to work in different ways. And I'm not suggesting that Andoni Iraola is exactly the same as Marco Silva, because he's not. And they like to play with different kind of players. And Marco Silva clearly rates experience and Premier League experience in particular in terms of the way the players he signs. But at some point, you have to think about what that means financially and understand that there has to be some sort of give and take between those two systems in order that Fulham can start to become profitable. And it's not about how many business lounges we can get into the new Riverside stand, although that does help, ours Tottenham. It's also about becoming sustainable within the squad ages on the pitch and becoming, you know, available to sell your players and being okay with that because you know that there are replacements. And this is what frustrated me about the entire Andre situation. I think you're sitting there looking currently at about £25 million for a player that I think is well within his rights to suggest that he might be Brazil's next number six. And Fulham are turning it down because they're worried about the fact that it might shift the dichotomies of midfield. No, if you bring in a player like Andre and you think, right, we've got a star here in the making and you've paid £25 million for him, then it's okay to sell João Palhinha in the summer. Now, I'm not saying they're the same player, they're not, but there is at least cover that allows a player to come in and Fulham not to be having to start from scratch when a key player leaves, as we saw this summer with Alexander Mitrovic. Because I tell you, if Palhinha had left and not Mitrovic, I think Fulham would be in the relegation scrap. And that's the problem, because the key issue was not addressed at the top of the field when Fulham did go, because there was no succession planning. And so if we look at Palhinha leaving this summer, which is a distinct possibility, and we bring someone in, and look, I don't know if Andre is going to be available in this summer, because I think that people are going to take notice of the fact that he's unbelievable. And I think it's more wild, to be honest, that they haven't already. And I think that then if you bring in a player and you Fulham sign a 30-year-old journeyman, a Scott McTominay figure playing number six on his own for Fulham, which I like, as in, this gives me shivers, it's nightmares at night kind of stuff. I think that you're kind of looking at the idea that Fulham could collapse. And that is where I have real issues with the lack of succession planning.
Yeah, I agree. I think the only thing that comes to mind as well, and I think has to be considered, is you put Palhinha on he's on a 5-year contract that you've extended at a higher wage, probably the highest earner at the club.
Yeah, what if that interest doesn't wage, right?
What if that interest doesn't rematerialize in the summer? And then you bring in Andre, who, as you say, is basically going to become Brazil's number six. And you play a system where there's two, and they won't, those two players are not in the squad to combine minutes, are they? It's not like Andre is like a,
I think they're different enough that you could play the two of them at the base.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be ideal, but then what I'm saying is you then add, so you've paid for Andre, you put him on that salary, you pay Palhinha on that salary. And then you've also got, as we talked about, you've got to do a striker, you're going to have to do a winger, you've got to do a centre-back as well. We keep saying, you know, there needs to be a big summer. Of course there needs to be a big summer. But also, I think it's not like, and this is where Fulham are hamstrung, because they haven't done the sales, or they haven't got these alternatives. And, you know, as you say, there isn't that resale. It's almost like a vicious circle in a way. You don't allow yourself the wiggle room to do those other positions. And then you might do another short-term plaster in one of them, and then that becomes a problem down the line. Like, I can kind of get it. Is what
the
I'm
best
saying.
Time to start was yesterday.
Yeah,
the next
of course,
best time
of course.
To start is today. Like, that, as far as I'm concerned, like, they need to get out of this cycle.
There are some players with resale value, though. I mean, we saw links today linking Robinson to Liverpool, and that could be a significant financial boost.
And then Fulham would have to spend quite significantly to buy another left back, because there's no one in the squad willing to take that rental on. This is the problem. There are none of this. So if the only player that I think has significant resale value where Fulham have already succession planned is Kenny Tete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got
the only one
within a contract.
But he doesn't have that much resale value, actually.
Well, anything's going to be a profit, because he costs, what, £1.2 million? So, like, I think you could sell Kenny Tete for £8 million and the people buying him would get a steal, and Fulham would be able to mark a significant profit on that as well. So
I think the point I'm making is, like, if you look at how much Fulham spent last summer, it's about 65. The summer before that was about 70 to, I think it was about 80 overall when you include Lukic.
Net?
Just out to the spending, so not just net. So obviously you can take off the Mitrovic element. But that's the bracket they're looking to spend, right? So, but it seems that way anyway. You then take, if you take 30 out, it's quite a significant chunk. And then you look at the positions. Is that the position you want to be spending that much of that budget going into a window? that's kind of the counterpoint, I think. Because you're not wrong. Like, everyone can see that. Signing Andre and having Andre and Paulinho would be fantastic. And it's the perfect succession planning. And if it was obvious that Paulinho would go in the summer, then great. But I think what we saw in January was, I think everyone expecting Paulinho to go, and he didn't. And we look at Paulinho's age, and he's 29. He's 29? Is he coming up to 29? It's around 29, isn't it? Are you going to get the same money for Paulinho? Well, I'm sure they should do. I'll get close to it. But I think there's an interesting element to that, which is not as straightforward, I think, is what I'd suggest. But I don't disagree on the point that Fulham do need to do succession planning. They have the oldest average age. I did a piece this month basically saying, I think Fulham have the oldest average age starting 11 of any team in the top four divisions in England. So it's quite clear what they've been going for. It's quite clear what they've done, and it's worked because it's kept them in the Premier League. But to sustain that, it has to evolve. You have to balance it. And, I've put that to Marco Silva and he recognises that, but he comes back and he talks about balance. And I think Fulham have to do that, because if they don't, then that progress, as you say, Jack, is going to be difficult. And then you end up in a scenario where you do get stuck and suddenly you're falling again.
All right. Well, look, we'll take a break there afterwards. We'll look ahead to Saturday's game against Bournemouth.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. It's Sammy here on the Thursday Club with Jack Collins and Peter Rutzer. Thank you to Green King Sport as ever for backing the Thursday Club this season. If you can't get to the cottage, then head to a Green King Sport pub instead. They'll be televising all of Fulham's fixtures in the 23-24 season. But you might have to wait a little while to watch a Fulham fixture on the TV. There isn't one for about a month and a half.
It's really after the Lord Mayor's show in here, isn't it?
little bit. I mean, look, I'm not, as a match going fan, I'm not complaining. Yeah. I'm happy to have some Saturday 3 PMs back in my life. It feels like it's been a while.
It's enjoyable consistency, isn't it? I was looking at the calendar thinking, oh, this is so, I can predict things.
Yeah. Old school, isn't it?
It feels really old school to have so many Saturday 3 PMs in a row. But look, if you're at a loose end this weekend, you want to go and watch some of the other football that's on telly this weekend, head to a Green King Sport pub. And if you download the Green King Sport app, you'll be able to get 10% off your drinks during any televised fixture. So download the app, grab 10% off your drinks and go watch other teams on the telly, just not Fulham. Let's look ahead then to Bournemouth on Saturday. I mean, Jack, Bournemouth had an absolute stinker of a start this season. And I think a lot of people wrote off Andoni Iraola very quick. I must admit, I was part of I believed the hype when he came in. I was there going like, I think this is a really smart move. I feel like sacking Gary O'Neill was a good decision. And not gonna lie, he had me going for a while, making me doubt my trust in the people that I enjoy reading and listening to online. But eventually, he's managed to crack it. And now Bournemouth, I'd say they're probably one of the one of those hottest teams in the league right now?
Yeah, ish. They're a funny kind of spot right now where they're playing really well and not getting results, which is a bit of a strange place and one that Fulham fans have been in before. But it is a sense that they're right on the up. And look, you've got to give credit to someone like Bill Foley, who's obviously the chairman, for not panicking early into the early days of a new regime and for allowing this to develop, because it was, I mean, I don't think they were ever particularly dreadful at the start of the year, but there were definitely points where it didn't feel like any of the, you know, automatic presses, triggers were working, and teams were finding it relatively easy to play around the Bournemouth press. Now, I watched quite a lot of Rayo Vallecano last year under Iola, and they were excellent. Really, really impressive, more than the sum of their parts, able to kind of bloody the noses of the big boys at times, pushed for Europe. They were a very, very interesting side, and he did a very, very good job there. And I think that's starting to translate. The way that this Bournemouth team worked, the mechanisms, the different shifts he's got going, especially in the midfield, where he's turned Ryan Christie from sort of a fairy number 10 into the most hardworking eight in the league, is pretty remarkable, to be perfectly honest with you. So quite a lot of players who are feel like they're improving as well under him. And obviously, you look at Solanke, he's obviously taking the headlines. I think it was 7 goals last year in the Premier League, 15 this time round already. We're talking about a player who has found his form. And look, I was a pretty big doubter of Dominic Solanke for long periods of his career. Never really thought that there was that translation from youth level into senior level, but he really does look like he's found something under Iola that makes him a terror. And look, it's very, very impressive to see what the manager's doing with that side. There's some really, really interesting players, I think, in this Bournemouth lineup. And yeah, they're one of the more intriguing sides in the league this year. You weren't sure quite what you were going to get. And it looks like it's turned around. But as Peter mentioned in part one, that win over Fulham was their last one in the Premier League. They were very unlucky against West Ham. They were absolutely brilliant. They should have been about 5-0 up when West Ham equalised. And whilst they dropped off in the second half, you can understand the frustrations considering how good they were to begin with. And then they drew with Forest as well, which was a little bit less impressive as a performance. But look, I still think there's plenty to like about this Bournemouth side, and there's plenty that Fulham should be wary of as they come to the Cottage at the weekend.
Yeah, Peter, have you been surprised by the way that Bournemouth season's gone? The horrendous, it was a really bad start. For me, it all felt like that 2-0 win they got at home to Newcastle. And this was a Newcastle side at the time that were doing pretty well. It felt like it all turned around then, because they just went on this mad run after that. Got about 5 wins from the next 6. But yeah, there was a moment where I think everyone thought that Bournemouth were like certainties for relegation alongside Burnley and Sheffield United. It really was that dark at maybe kind of late October, early November.
Yeah, it was, I think it was quite a tense moment, because obviously they'd backed Iraola, they'd made changes in the transfer window, it's a new ownership.
And Wolves doing so well, coming to Bournemouth and winning as well, that was a bit like,
that didn't help.
No, obviously everyone's out, you know, got their eye on, ready to stick the knife in because of the decision they made, you know, understandably, because O'Neill did very well. It was pretty touch and go, like you said. But I think there's also, you know, it's kind of understandable in a way. You know, Iraola's come to a new country. There's the language element. I don't think his assistant came over with him from Rio.
I think he took over the job.
Which, you know, I think that's a big part. You know, I mean, you see with when Marco Silva came to Fulham, he brought his, you know, had 5 members of his backroom team, didn't he? So that makes a big difference. And obviously it's taken a bit of time to impart his ideas for some of these younger players to, you know, adapt to the Premier League. And now they look like a really attractive, dangerous, difficult team to play against. And that's what you want to be if you're a club of Bournemouth's side. And I think there's certainly a good deal of relief that they went on a good run. But they have all the components really now for a strong team that can progress. You know, likes of Dom Solanke, who is their goal scorer. He's finally living up to the potential that he's been so long touted for, a real hardworking player. And now a goal scorer. I liked Alex Scott. I mean, we saw how well he did when Fulham went on Boxing Day. He's obviously a really clever, intelligent footballer. Justin Kluivert as well. It's just the way those front three sort of intermix. And obviously Kluivert was a Brexit GBE decision away from joining Fulham previously.
God damn you, so, Nigel.
Let's not go that way. it's you know, they've got an attractive team, and I think they'll want to win, because, you know, it's when you go on these kind of runs that you start, everything gets a bit more nervous, and obviously Fulham are seeing that themselves. So it makes for quite an interesting game, because it's two teams that do really want to win, probably need a win. Probably Fulham more than Bournemouth, but it should make for a fascinating contest.
I do think it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, Philip Billing got sent off. Antoine Semenyo came off injured at half time in the last game. Billing didn't start, so I don't think it's going to cause them all that many problems. In terms of that, that will be Clivert, who'll take back his starting spot. Sinisterra on one flank, they could play Ouattara instead on the right hand side and switch his side. I don't think they will. I think they'll go for Tavernier. But I do wonder if actually Semenyo's absence, and even if it is Tavernier in there, allows Fulham an opening, because the one weakness that I look at in this Bournemouth side, and that this is quite basic, because I think that if you looked at a Fulham side for years back and you went, oh, who's the oldest member of the team, and you took a crack at Tim Ream, then you would have, you may struggled. Also, oh, he's come up from the Championship, maybe we'll be able to attack that side, and they would have come up against it. But I don't think Adam Smith is all that good. And I think that we're looking at Fulham's strongest attacking lineups have always come down that left-hand side, with Robinson bombing on, with Willian, with Tom Kearney combining with the two of them. If they can get overloads on Adam Smith, who is not a bad player by any stretch of the imagination, and I'm not suggesting that he is, but I do think he's probably the weakest member of that back line. I really like Senesi Zabani, I think is a real talent. And Lloyd Kelly's having a tremendous season, coming in and out of centre-back and left-back, keeping Milos Kerkez, who I really, really like, out of the team. I think Smith is the one that Fulham attack, and it's going to be interesting to see how that battle goes down that left-hand side of Fulham's.
Jack, in terms of Fulham lineup, I mean, we've just still not got that much.
What can you do? Who's coming back in?
I mean, you mentioned...
Harry Wilson isn't ready yet, is he?
No. Well, I mean, obviously, Marco's press conference might confirm something different, but I don't think so. I would...
Maybe Adama Traore.
I tell you what, though, I must say, you said that Muniz grabbed his first goal on Saturday, and certainly not what I was watching, because the co-commenter said it was this Munoz guy.
I did see that. I don't know who that was, but...
this Munoz guy was having a great
Crystal
game.
Crystal Palace have just signed at right back. Yes. So I was impressed when he started playing up front for us.
was he not in goal, Munoz? Or am I getting really confused?
I was doing my head in on that. So I was just like, it's not like... it's not like it was a difficult spelling. So it's literally say it as you see it. Anyway. Oh God. I don't know why. Maybe just Kenny Tete as a change.
If Breuer starts, then maybe. If he doesn't, then no, I don't think. Like, I also, considering what happened with the end of the Burnley game and Kenny Tete coming on, I can imagine him not playing in this game. But I do think that if Breuer starts, it would be very interesting to see if they can start to get that combination going, because I think Fulham will start to cross more again out of nowhere. And it's been something that we haven't really seen this season for Wright. And also we saw at the start of the season when we tried to do that, didn't work. But I do think it'd be interesting that having an aerial threat in Breuer, will Fulham start to dial that back up again? And if so, does that give an opportunity for Kenny Tete to come back into the side? So that I would consider that.
I want to see Breuer. I really want to see him play, just to, even if it's an hour, just to see what his movement's like. Because I think you're right, Jack. I think the big difference this year compared to last year is movement in the final third. And it was a problem at the end of last year when Mitrovic was suspended. It was just adjusting to where the new guy is moving. And it's never really felt, until Jimenez started to find some form, that Fulham had quite worked it out. And then as soon as they did with Jimenez, he's been suspended and now injured. So I'd be interested to see if whether Breuer's movements make their crosses look better, whether it means they change their style across, as you say. Because Breuer's a player who seems to, you know, he's got the physical presence, he's got height, he's got that side to his game. But as you said earlier, Jack, he's quick. He seems quite, you know, he's an off the, can be off the shoulder as well, which makes him almost a complete player, which is quite exciting. And clearly he's not reached those heights, particularly since his injury. So it'd be nice to see what that does to the rest of the Fulham attack, you know, because I feel like on the left, which has been Fulham's strength, we've seen Robinson almost improve because he's been doing lower crosses, more cutbacks that seem to work quite well. So does he change? So yeah, it should be interesting to see what that means and whether, you know, now that he's got a week with the team, if they can start getting onto his wavelength. Because sometimes it's natural and it's quick. Other times it can take a bit longer, can't it?
It's also £50 on all of our season tickets if he doesn't hit that amount of games that he needs to play. So it's in all of our interests, I think, for Breuer to start on Saturday.
Christ.
All right, we'll take another break afterwards. We're getting some of your emails. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy here with Jack and Peter. Just a few emails before we finish. This one from David Nicholson says, "Evening, Fulhamish." I think this was a few weeks ago. He says, "A noble defeat last night in the semi. As Peter Rutzler has said, it's still progress." Okay, this must have been after the Liverpool game. Anyway, it's a good email. He said, I watched the hat-tricks video on the club website. It was a reminder of having a forward line containing, at times, Zamora, brackets when he was good, Johnson, Dempsey and Duff, and briefly Pogrebniak. I don't actually remember the football being that scintillating at the time, but not a bad set of options. Does the pod think that it was just an exceptional pool of players in a very different era, or could it be replicated affordably given all of the concerns about FFP, etc.? Best wishes from David." I mean, it was we had a hefty good amount of strikers in that period.
It was a different system, though. We played with two out and out, albeit inverted wingers.
Yeah,
in Duff and Davis, with two strikers up top in Zamora and Johnson. So, I believe Pogrebniak came back in post Zamora, right? So he was the kind of replacement. It might have been a 6 month overlap, if I'm not mistaken, but there was definitely not much in it. So that was the way that Fulham set up. So it obviously completely different to the way that we set up now with a single focal point striker. And I talked about this, why we had three strikers when we only play with one feels a bit mad, but also having those wingers who cut inside and actually score more goals. And actually the first time we saw an inverted winger, or in the modern era at least, was that Hodgson side, right? Who played Duff and Davis inverted in order to allow them to come inside and shoot, while the movement of the strikers, it helped that Andy Johnson was a channel runner. So he opened the game up for different players to play. I think there's a difference in the style of football we see now, but I think that you could feasibly have four goal scoring options in your centre forward, number 10, left winger and right winger. It's just that in the way that we are right now, it's much more difficult to allow all those players the space and time to get themselves on the score sheet. But we've seen it on occasion, I think, in this era. So I don't think it's the end of the world. And we definitely saw it in the Championship era.
Yeah. A couple more questions here. This one actually isn't so much of a question, but I enjoyed this from Holly Lively, who said, "All of I could think of when Rodrigo Muniz scored on Saturday was baby giraffe scores finally."
It did feel like that, didn't it? I was like, oh, I was really happy for him, man. I really want him to do well. I just don't like watching him limber around on the pitch. Like,
it was beautiful. I loved the emotion. Man, that was really touching. And also, Peter, I don't know if you saw the interview that he did on the club website, his first interview in English as well. It feels like a big week for Rodrigo.
He's come on. I mean, when he joined, it's probably a massive shock. And he's always felt like quite a young person, if that makes sense, not just in terms of age, but personality and character. And obviously he's come in, he went to Borough last year, which wasn't much fun, but I think probably was quite a good sort of way in which to adapt to life over here, I suppose.
Enjoy the worst.
Yeah, set expectations a little bit. But, you know, I think with him, you're drawn to his work rate and what, you know, his, the amount of what he puts in. It's quite obvious that, you know, what he wants it a lot. He could easily be, you know, a crowd favourite, but yeah, just needs to refine those rough edges, I think, is the best way of putting it.
I honestly would give him one more loan. I'd give him one more Championship loan. Find a team that suits him and send Rodrigo Muniz out on one more Championship loan. And whilst Fulham, you know, strengthen in that position, and if it is Raul and one more who starts next season, I'm probably okay with that, especially with a one striker system, having two in there. And Stansfield coming back, although I think if Jay comes back, he is going to primarily feature as a winger, considering the way that Birmingham play and considering the system change. I think that we'll see more of Jay cutting in as a wide forward than as an out and out number nine, because he's played with two up top at Birmingham. So I wouldn't be averse to giving him one, like another loan. Now, whether that's, I think a Championship loan would be a good thing.
but I wouldn't be averse to it being a slightly more combative La Liga club either, like a Getafe or someone who plays a slightly more kind of physical style, and just see what that looks like, and then make a decision on his future. Because I think him playing a bit part role at Fulham for another year isn't necessarily going to see what we could get out of him. Whereas I think getting him out there leading a line at a decent level might just help to round off some of those edges. Because I do think there's a player in there. I just don't think we're seeing any of it right now, because I think he needs some consistent minutes.
Yeah. He's also not necessarily a player who's like thriving off his youth either. He's not like a burst of pace. He's someone that I think might grow into, and I think strikers do get better with age a little bit as well. They learn the places to go. Plus also, he's a much more attractive proposition now to a Championship club. He's a Premier League goal scorer. He's played Premier League's decent amount of Premier League minutes, and he scored only two goals, but he scored a good goal against Ipswich in the Carabao Cup, and he's scored against Burnley in the Premier League. I think he's a little bit more of a coup than maybe he was for Middlesbrough a couple of years ago, where, okay, this is some Brazilian lad that scored, you know,
that we tried to sign and couldn't.
Well, also he did score goals for Fulham in our promotion season, but we scored 106 of them. So it was hard for anyone that played up front a decent amount of minutes not to score goals. I don't think it was that much of an indication of Rodrigo Muniz's talent. I think the two goals he scored this season is more impressive than the six or seven that he scored in the Championship promotion season. This one from TJ Fogarty just said,
shouts out TJ, by
the way. Yeah, from Philly, Fulham. He's actually not really asked this as a question. I like that he's just given this as a statement for us to react to. Sander Berge is the Pellini replacement. Not as good, but gets the job done and will stay here a while. Also, Burnley going down, so we can get him for cheaper. Peter, thoughts on Sander Berge? I mean, it would be an unremarkable replacement, but it would be a replacement that I'd go, yep, fine.
I think it would work. I think he's a different kind of player.
The first time he's been linked, right?
No, exactly. So he's clearly on the radar. I mean, he fits the physical profile of what Fulham want in midfield. So it's an option, I'd say. Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. And final email from Thomas Noakes, titled "In Sammy's Wife's Defense."
Oh God, is this Kaz's burner?
Yeah, maybe. Thomas Noakes. I never realised. Dear Sammy, a quick bit of pod housekeeping, if I may. When your wife pointed at Sessegnon during the Wigan Man United game and said, "Didn't he used to play for Fulham?" you said she was so close to making a brilliant call. But of course, she was spot on. And I reckon she knew exactly which brother she was referring to. Love the pod. Keep up the good work, you whites, from Tom. Maybe. Maybe I am actually playing her a disservice. Maybe she did know it was Stevie Sess after all.
I must have missed this episode, so I don't know what's going on.
It was actually
you and me both there, mate.
It was me, Drew, and Paddy Barkley, and I can't remember how it came up, but we were watching the Wigan Man United game, and Caroline saw Stevie Sessegnon and said, "Oh, that's Sessegnon. He used to play for Fulham, right?" And I was like, "Oh, you're so close," because I know she was thinking about Ryan Sessegnon.
Unless you clarified it. AKA Tom Noakes.
Yeah. Did you clarify it though?
Said, "Oh, that's."
If she went, "That's Sessegnon. He used to play for Fulham." She's absolutely spot on.
It's correct. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
There is nothing wrong with that statement.
But then I said, "Oh, it's so close, but that's actually Ryan Sessegnon's twin brother, Stephen." And then she was like, "Oh."
Who also played for Fulham.
Did let that out, didn't
if
you?
If you'd said that, she would have gone, "So I'm right."
Stephen Sessegnon only played about two games. And one of them, I'm fairly sure, was the night before my wedding. I'm not 100% sure Kaz was tuned into Fulham 2, Huddersfield 1, but she might have been.
Maybe. I mean, potentially. Potentially. I'm not going to speak on her behalf.
Maybe
I think you're doing a disservice. Tom's right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry, Caroline. You clearly did know that was Stephen Sessegnon, and I was too patronising to you in that moment, and I apologise. Just before we
finish, she's going to be watching like old games and like Premier League retro, and she's going to be watching a Sunderland game and see Stefan Sessegnon and be like, "Oh, that must be Ryan and Stephen's cousin." And you're going to be like, absolutely spot on, yeah.
One final thing before we go. Thoughts on blue cards? It's just drops the announcement today.
I don't like them being blue. I think that either football should take up the Gaelic football analogy of yellow, black and red cards. But on the whole, I'm not completely anti-sin bin. I think it's a relatively sensible idea.
Yeah. Peter?
Yeah, I'm not against it. I prefer orange. I mean, surely that's literally, you know,
it's for colorblind people. Orange
card. Ah, yeah, yeah. Good point. But it would have been quite neat with the metaphor of the orange card, though. So that's a shame. Yeah. No, I don't. The actual concept is... I think makes science.
I love the concept. I think that there's too much dissent in football and there's got to be a way of eradicating it. You're never just going to do that through yellow cards, which never turn into red cards. And I'm all for taking away cynical fouls other than João Palhinha.
Yeah, JP's going to have to adapt his game here.
Yeah. But it may mean less yellows that lead to suspension. So there's an upside, unless they also count.
I think they do. So because before we came on air, Sammy and I were discussing this because we were like, what happens if you get a black card and then a yellow card?
And you mean the a blue answer card is, and then a yellow card.
Sorry, a blue card and then a yellow card. I'm still in Gaelic mode. And the answer is you get sent off.
Oh, you do.
It has this, carries the same weight as a yellow card.
I do
so
like
any combination of yellow and black, well, yellow and blue. Sorry, this is really in my head. I've got no. It's the same. Yeah. Any combination, as in Gaelic, of yellow and blue or yellow and black.
Well, then what's the point in giving a blue? Like, if someone's on a yellow,
if someone's a yellow,
there's no point.
If someone's on a yellow, they're never going to get a blue as a second yellow. But a second yellow after a blue would still see you sent off.
Interesting. I do like the idea of sin bins though, because I've played in it with grassroots and it actually is quite effective. I mean, at least at that level. I don't know how it works when you're playing in front of thousands of people in terms of making someone go from extremely angsty and irritable to a little bit calmer, but it seemed to have an effect. So
have you ever been binned, Peter?
No, I'm not. No comment. I'm not saying if it's me or not.
Oh, that's answer enough, I think. Yeah. That's answer enough.
I think we know what happens to Peter. Only ever plays 80 minutes when he plays football.
It's going to be good for 80-minute players. They're going to pick one up in the like 47th minute, or no, maybe the 55th, take a 10-minute breather, and back they come, full of energy. It's going to be great.
Yeah, Peter's actually got it figured out, is what we don't realise here. He's like, I can give myself a 10-minute breather here and just say, oh, yeah. Just me, I'm mouthing off the ref again. Right, that'll do for the podcast today. Thank you very much for listening. Peter, lovely to have you back.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'll be back again soon, hopefully, once things all iron out. Yeah.
Yeah, and Jack, thank you.
Thank you, Sammy. Always a pleasure.
All right. George will be back on the podcast this Sunday. It's been a little
everyone's
while.
Everyone's back.
Yeah, everyone's back from gallivanting.
Sammy's banned me from hosting after the shambles of Sunday.
No, it's Farrell that I'm banned from ever being on again. Abomination of a podcast title. George will be back on Sunday reviewing everything that happens in the Bournemouth game. And then we'll be back with the Thursday Club this time next week, looking ahead to Villa and the return of some of our players from the Africa Cup of Nations. So have a great weekend, whatever you get up to, and come on, you whites.
You super Eagles.